Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you. It's got about 18 million cracks in it.
And it may be hard to see tonight, but we are all standing under a glass ceiling right now.
And the light is shining through like never before, filling us all with the hope and the sure knowledge that the path will be a little easier next time.
Thanks to you, we've reached a milestone.
Think of the suffragists who gathered at Seneca Falls in 1848, and those who kept fighting until women could cast their votes.
Tonight's victory is not about one person. It belongs to generations of women and men who struggled and sacrificed and made this moment possible. In our country, it started right here in New York, a place called Seneca Falls in 1848.
That is, of course, Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee for president in 2016. And I do think she's going to be the first female president of the United States. This is Mark Levine reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I have a lot to talk about today. I want to talk about Hillary Clinton's victory and what it means to be the first female president of the United States. I want to talk about where Bernie Sanders goes from here and then the collapse, as it were, of the Republican Party. Tom Friedman argues it is morally bankrupt and needs to start over again. And with Donald Trump's clearly racist comments, Republicans are looking at, well, hiding under the sand. But let's start first with those words you just heard, with the words of Hillary Clinton. Now, longtime listeners of the show know I'm a big fan of Secretary, Senator, First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton. I have been a fan of hers for some time. I've talked about my work with her. I've talked about why I have so much respect for her intelligence, her determination, her passion for liberal causes, and just her level of detail. The fact that she really cares about the details, which I think matters in a chief executive officer of the United States. But my support of Hillary Clinton really didn't have that much to do with her gender, I got to be honest to say. I didn't mind. It wasn't a negative. But, you know, I like some women politicians. I like Hillary Clinton. I like Elizabeth Warren. Obviously, I don't like Sarah Palin. I don't like Michelle Bachmann. And none of my feelings about the four of those individuals have anything to do with their gender. It was a tough, tough decision for me that in some ways I regret, but I supported Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton in 2008. And again, that wasn't because of her gender or because of his race. It was at the time because I saw the level of excitement for Barack Obama and thought he'd have a better chance in winning a more difficult race against John McCain in 2008. My point is that Hillary Clinton being the first female president wasn't really something on my radar screen. I mean, I knew it was true, and I knew that it wasn't my reasons for voting for or against her or any politician. I have certainly endorsed women over men and men over women and women over women and men over men, always based on policy. But last night, as I watched Hillary Clinton come out before all those cheering people, with that music playing. And I saw someone who reminded me of my own mother. And those of you who know me know I'm very attached to my mother. I'm a proud mama's boy. I saw a gentle soul. Now, don't get me wrong, she's a fierce competitor. She's brilliant. She's tough. And as she said last night, her mama taught her not to give in to bullies. So none of this has anything to do with the iron steel that is Hillary Clinton's passion for justice and for her causes, of which we know from children and other things. But as I saw her greet the people there, shake some hands, as I saw her clasp her heart, as I saw her do something which she really doesn't do very often, revel in the moment. Hillary Clinton is such a detailed person, such someone who wants to get the job done, such really a workaholic, that her focus is virtually always on the task at hand. It's on getting things done. It's on reading the details. It's on knowing the details. It's on making her case. But for a moment, just for a moment, it's a rare thing to see sometimes with Hillary. She should show it more. As she was coming out on stage, I could see her basking in it, enjoying it, doing for just a split instant what Donald Trump does every minute of his life, where he cares nothing about policy and all he does is bask in it. But for Hillary, it was kind of sweet. It's like, I don't know, the nerd that finds romance, or the policy wonk that finds that he or she actually can do sports. It was just a measure of Hillary Clinton finally seeing the real adulation that a lot of people like me have for her. And she, I believe, was genuinely touched. I don't think she fakes emotions well, good or bad. She seemed genuinely touched. And as I looked at her greeting everyone, and I said to myself, this is our next president. And then I think she gave a powerful speech. You heard just a little bit of it. And she talked some about policy and some about Donald Trump and some about the future of America. But she began by acknowledging what we all know to be true, but sometimes don't sit back enough to contemplate. This woman will, I believe, be our first woman president of the United States. There's one more glass ceiling to crack, she said, and it's not the one on top of this building. I was thinking, you know, they didn't show the glass ceiling. She said there was one. I was thinking how many places they looked for in Brooklyn before they found a building with a glass ceiling, just to get her metaphor down. But she's right, of course. 44 presidents of the United States and never a woman. Of course, women couldn't vote until 1920 in this country. She pointed out that her mother, who'd be 97 today, her deceased mom, who she very much models herself after, was born on the day that the Constitutional Amendment was passed, the 19th Amendment, passed in 1920, to give women the right to vote. And you realize that, well, women could only vote 100 years ago, less than 100 years ago, actually. It's important for us to realize how far we have come. As Hillary Clinton pointed out, in Seneca Falls in 1858 in New York, women suffragettes, they called them then, people who advocated for women's right to vote, women and men who advocated for that, did something that had never been done in any country in history before. For all the people that talk about, a same-sex marriage has never been done before, it's too weird, it's too unusual, women voting in 1858 was as crazy an idea as gay people getting married was considered 20 years ago. It was almost like blacks no longer being slaves. Women were men's property. Property. Go look at the Bible and listen, lots of people Jews and Christians venerate the Bible, to be sure, but, you know, women are kind of sold for so many goats and sheep. That's how it was done for thousands of years, and not just in the Middle East either. That's how it was done in Europe, Africa, South America, everywhere. Women's equality was a radical, radical idea. The idea that women, like men, could think for themselves and make difficult decisions and have that complex thinking that we would want as a president of the United States, unheard of, even in 1920. In fact, when Woodrow Wilson died, when Woodrow Wilson had a terrible stroke, he didn't die. He was almost brain dead, but he didn't die. His wife, Edith Wilson, basically took over the country. Not that many people know that. His vice president was considered terrible. In those days, the vice president really had much less to do even than vice presidents today. And so secretly she ran the country before even women could vote. You could argue that Edith Wilson was our first woman president. But think how far we've come since Seneca Falls, since the 19th Amendment. You know, America's kind of slow, honestly. Israel had a female prime minister in 1971, I think. Golda Meir was prime minister. That's 45 years ago, a half century ago. Margaret Thatcher, prime minister of Great Britain in the 1980s, more than 30 years ago. And we look around the world, we see people like Angela Merkel in Germany. We see, and for whatever your criticisms are or aren't about Angela Merkel, it's not because of her gender. Or Margaret Thatcher, it wasn't because of her gender. We just had a female head of Brazil be impeached. But it wasn't because of her gender. It's because of corruption and other things in Brazil. Oh, I've just been told by my producer, Golda Meir became prime minister of Israel in 1969. That's almost 50 years ago. That's a long time ago. You know, it's one thing to be the ceremonial Queen of England. The reigning queen, of course, Elizabeth has been there for more than 50 years. But to be the actual foreign state head of a country? The first question I guess I have for this country is, why were we so slow? Why are we, who's supposed to be leading the way in democracy, why are we one of the last countries to even put a woman as the head of a major American party? So I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. I don't support her because she's a woman. I support her because I think she's going to be the best president of the United States. But last night, I allowed myself the luxury, even though I don't support candidates based on affirmative action, I allow myself the luxury of thinking what it means for America, of what it means to a 5-year-old girl or a 15-year-old girl to truly see that anything and everything she wants to do is open to her. I know Mark Grimaldi, my producer, has a young daughter. And he didn't support, he actually supported Bernie, which is fine, Mark, but he didn't do it based on gender either. But still, Mark, there's got to be something.
I have to admit, when I was watching, I watched pretty much everything last night, wall to wall. That was the first thing I thought of. And I got a little
teary-eyed.
Just like a little
misty.
Bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really was special.
Yeah, because knowing that, it totally apart from the policies of Hillary and Bernie and all that, which we'll get to, isn't it nice to know that your baby daughter, that all our baby daughters, that every woman and girl in the United States of America truly can grow up one day to be president.
Long overdue.
We're going to take a break. 888-48-MARK, 888-4862-75. Right back, right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. talking about, well, lots of things. I want to talk about what it means to be the first female president of the United States, and then move on in the second half of the hour, talk a little bit about where Bernie Sanders goes, and then round it up by the ultimate craziness from Donald Trump. But let's just focus a little bit more for a moment on Hillary's role as the first female president, which I think she will be. And let me go to Leslie from Ithaca on line one. Hey, Leslie, how are you?
Great. I love your commentary.
Thank you.
I wanted to add something, just a historical note, because my daughter and I recently visited the Seneca Falls National Park for the Women's Rights Convention.
Okay.
And the organizers, the European-based organizers of that convention, were in contact with the local tribal nations. They were called the Iroquois tribes at that point, but now we use the traditional native word of Haudenosaunee. And the Haudenosaunee nations, the women have always been participants in their forms of government and have always had a say and a vote. So I thought that was an interesting...
It is. We shouldn't only focus, obviously, on European societies. I was thinking, actually, even before Golda Meir, predating her by just a few years, was Indira Gandhi, a very famous prime minister of India. But you're absolutely right. Native American societies, for hundreds of years predating modern times, definitely had women, some Native, not all, some Native American societies, like the Iroquois that you mentioned. So that's a very good point.
Great.
I appreciate your sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Calling in anytime. I was looking at the list of women heads of government, not heads of state, again, not queens, because we know, you know, they, queens are mostly ceremonial, although one could argue that Queen Elizabeth I was actually a real queen. But in terms of elected officials, the first one was from Ceylon. That's an island off the coast of India that's now called Sri Lanka. She was in 1960. Then Indira Gandhi, Golda Meir, whom I mentioned, the first one in Europe was indeed Margaret Thatcher. But this is 50 years ago. What took us so long? I mean, we couldn't even pass an equal rights amendment 50 years ago. What's our deal? Totally apart from the pluses or minuses of Hillary Clinton, do you really think that there was never a woman qualified, good enough, strong enough to be president before now? I mean, when Geraldine Ferraro was chosen by Walter Mondale in 1984, frankly, an election he lost in a landslide, that was the first vote I ever cast. And that was considered a huge deal. But, of course, Geraldine Ferraro was a member of Congress. She wasn't a governor. She wasn't anyone like Hillary Clinton, who'd been not only First Lady, but United States Senator and Secretary of State. We've only recently had our first woman Attorney General. Our first woman Secretary of State was under Bill Clinton. People need to realize, millennials, listen up. This is new stuff. I know you take it for granted. But for just one moment, let's look back and think what a wonderful moment we're reaching. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this.
To the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I have no doubt that there are some people who vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. I don't think there are many, but I think there's some. Sometimes I wonder if Leslie Marshall is one of them. I do know women, including a close friend of mine who won't be named because she'd be very embarrassed, who supported Hillary very strongly in 2008, and when Hillary lost to Obama, was so upset that at least for a time, after John McCain nominated Sarah Palin as his vice president, for a time, this Democratic woman, friend of mine, who I won't name, told me that she was going to vote for McCain because of Palin. Now, I talked her off that ledge, and she's very glad I did. She's to this day, says she can't believe she said that. And listen, Sarah Palin was easy to see that she was not qualified to be president, and my friend came around to Obama pretty quickly. But for a moment, for a shining moment, just the prospect of having a woman on the ticket was enough to persuade at least my good friend to lose her mind for a little bit and consider voting for her. And I have no doubt, no doubt whatsoever, that there are men, maybe a few women, who will be against Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, who think a woman's not ready to be president of the United States. I dare say these people who are for or against Hillary because she's a woman probably wash each other out and probably are 5 or maybe 10% of voters tops. Most that want Hillary or don't want Hillary have to do with her policies, her past, her all kinds of things. The kinds of things we discuss on this show all the time. As again, you know, I've done 2,000 radio shows. I can't recall any time other than today I've really focused on Hillary Clinton's gender. It's, to me, I want the best candidate. But here's what's so cool, now that I'm focusing on it, at least for today. Once Hillary Clinton becomes president, and I think she will, and I don't mean to be complacent, and we all have to work hard for it. But once she becomes president, the second female president will hardly notice. We'll hardly notice. That woman, when she runs, Democrat or Republican, or Green or Libertarian, but Democrat or Republican, will be chosen or not chosen, again, based on the quality of her policies and speeches and biography, and not based on her gender. That's the thing about a glass ceiling. Indeed, that's what glass ceiling means. Once you break through a glass ceiling, you can't put it back. You've broken through. That's what this means. And I think the same is true for the first African-American president. The same will be true for the first Jewish president. Bernie, you came really close. He came closer than any other Jewish candidate before. The first Latino president, the first Asian-American president. And dare I say, and this is going to take some time, folks, the first Muslim president, the first transgender president, the first atheist president. Yeah, the first gay president. It'll happen. When you open one door, all the other doors get a bit less stuck. They all open up just a little bit wider. So totally apart from the fact that I'm a big fan of Hillary Clinton, and I know some of you aren't, for a moment, just for a moment, just for last night, it's nice to think about a few doors opening all over America. I want to move on and talk about Bernie Sanders. I know a lot of you are his supporters. Here's your chance to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I stayed up late last night. If I seem bleary-eyed today, that's why. Of course, I'm on Eastern Time in Washington area, Northern Virginia, and I wanted to wait for California. And I felt that Bernie wanted to wait for California, but the results were maddening slow, at least by Eastern Time standards. And here it was, I think it was 1:45 in the morning. It may have been later, maybe been after 2. I lose track around 2 of the actual time. So 11 p.m. seems reasonable to Californians, but 2 a.m. is less reasonable to us on the East Coast. In any case, I was waiting for Bernie to speak, and I thought the hesitation, the long hesitation, because CNN must have said, we're waiting for Sanders to speak for like an hour, I guess to keep me from going to bed. But I thought the hesitation was he wanted to wait till California was declared for Hillary. She was way ahead in the early polls coming out, but she hadn't been declared, at least as of 3 a.m. when I went to bed. And I thought he was going to wait for that and then come out and concede. He did come out. Some of you saw it, night owls like me. And looking at his face, I actually thought he was going to concede. His talk about how terrible Trump was, about, he didn't quite use the word coming together, but about, you know, fighting people like Donald Trump. He barely mentioned Hillary. And she was very gracious to him, I thought, earlier in the evening. And then he didn't. He didn't concede. He talked about D.C. Now, there is one more primary, and, you know, I support statehood for D.C. I do not like to leave the District of Columbia out. I don't know why they wait till June 14th. They should move their primary a little bit earlier, I think, so they can have a voice. But there is one more D.C. primary this Tuesday, June 14th. Hillary Clinton will win that in a landslide, whether Bernie's in the race or not. It's, frankly, her people, her demographics, the kind of people that support her. Bernie Sanders tends to win in very rural areas, very white areas. I'm not saying anything about, I don't think Bernie's racist in the least, but I'm just telling you the demographics of his supporters. Hillary Clinton's going to win D.C. in a landslide. I think it'll be at least 65-35, probably better, probably 70-30. We'll see. But it ain't going to change the race. So what's Bernie Sanders fighting for? Well, I think he's fighting for his ideas. That's true. But somewhere around, I don't know, New York, maybe? I think Bernie Sanders went on the wrong track. I like a lot of his ideas. I support single-payer health care. He fights very hard against bad trade deals, against corruption on Wall Street, against for an increase in the minimum wage. I'm sympathetic to a lot of things Bernie Sanders says. And early in the campaign, you may recall, I praised both Bernie and Hillary a lot. It was very clear when we watched the Republican debates where everyone was doing everything but throw food at each other with nasty personal insults that had nothing to do with policy. And you saw Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton give respectful disagreements on everything from guns to health care to income inequality to Wall Street reform. It was great. It was a wonk's dream. I loved it. And I came on air telling you how much I loved it and why I thought our party, the Democratic Party, was so much more substantive than that nasty personal food fight over the Republican Party. One of Bernie Sanders' best moments, I think, universally considered by all Democrats, was when he said, "I've heard enough about your damn emails," or words to that effect. He understood that Democrats hunger for policy, for changes, for how candidates can make a difference in their lives, not petty political squabbles. Bernie Sanders rose above it, and I gave him every credit for it. And then I think around the time of the New York primary, give or take, I think Bernie Sanders saw that victory was in his grasp. He started winning a bunch. And his bright tone, positive message, started turning negative. Not about policy. It's perfectly fine to criticize Hillary Clinton based on her policy or on her past acts as Secretary of State or Senator. That's absolutely fair game. But I don't know. When I look at what happened in Nevada, when I look at the complaints about the process, look, I understand people who hate superdelegates. We can have a whole discussion about superdelegates. That's fine. But with or without superdelegates, Hillary Clinton won fair and square. And by a lot, she beat Bernie Sanders in a landslide. She beat Bernie by far more than Obama beat her. Obama barely beat her 8 years ago. She won in the popular vote. She won in the number of states. She won in the number of pledged delegates. She won in the number of superdelegates. If there were no superdelegates, Hillary wins in a landslide. If it was just a popular vote, Hillary wins in a landslide. Frankly, the things that Bernie Sanders won in were some of the most undemocratic contests there were. I hate caucuses. I think the Democratic Party should ban caucuses. Primaries, you go, you vote. It's like Election Day. Your vote is secret. You can go and spend 5 minutes and vote, cast your ballot. It's just like Election Day in November. Not a caucus. A caucus, you got to be able to get childcare for 4 hours. You got to be able to spend your entire Saturday afternoon. You got to be public about your views. It's a very different process, and I think a much more undemocratic one. Primaries might get 15% of the vote. That's still very low. But caucuses will get 3%. So if you take the real number of votes, Hillary beat Bernie by even more than the figures we have in pledged delegates. If anything, the system was rigged to help Bernie, not Hillary. In fact, the whole big fight in Nevada, remember that fight? What happened in that fight? What happened is that Hillary won the Nevada primary or caucuses. I forget which it was in Nevada. I think it was a caucus. She won the Nevada race. And then Bernie Sanders tried through county and state delegate shenanigans to still get more delegates. He tried to rig the system, and then Nevada Democratic leaders rigged it back, as it were. And Hillary got the same percentage that she won in the race, 52% or whatever it was. She got, I think, one or two more delegates than Bernie. And that's what Bernie people were going to knock over chairs over? Interestingly, Bernie Sanders was not quick to condemn that the way he should have been. And a lot of the hatred against the current Democratic chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, is because she condemned Bernie's failure to condemn his people acting in ways they shouldn't act, the way they did in Nevada, threatening the chair and all kinds of awful things. Now, I know the vast, vast majority of Bernie Sanders supporters wouldn't do this. I know Bernie Sanders can't countenance that, but he got caught up in the moment. He couldn't get out of it. There are reasons to criticize Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I think the debate, frankly, is she didn't schedule enough debates. That's fair. That's legitimate. You can criticize her for that. But Bernie Sanders supporters, I beseech you. Bernie ran a good race. He brought up a lot of great ideas. He pushed Hillary to the left. Hillary has come out strong against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. By the way, the TPP, oh my God. Any policy person knows about the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Certainly someone running for president should know about it, except that when Donald Trump heard the TPP, he said, the PPP? And then made some reference to urine that I won't play on the air. Oh my God. But back to what I was saying. Bernie succeeded. He pushed Hillary to the left on TPP. He pushed her on minimum wage. I think she's going to be very tough on Wall Street. Frankly, her proposal, which doesn't just deal with banks the way Glass-Steagall does, but deals with all brokerage firms, is, I think, the better proposal. I used to work for Congressman Barney Frank, and I think it's closer to the model of Dodd-Frank. It's a complex, difficult thing to regulate financial systems, and I think she's got a good plan. So I understand people when your candidate loses. I ran and lost, right? I ran for Congress 2 years ago and lost big. I lost in a landslide, worse than Bernie. Then I came back last year and won my race as delegate. You know, from the time I was a kid, my candidates always lost. I supported Gary Hart over Walter Mondale. And then I supported Walter Mondale over Ronald Reagan. Lost, lost. I supported Al Gore over Mike Dukakis in the primary. He lost. And then I supported Mike Dukakis against George W. Bush. And he lost. In 1992, I even supported Paul Tsongas. Remember him? Most people don't. Against Bill Clinton. He lost. The first candidate I ever voted for that won was Bill Clinton in 1992. And again in 1996. I would argue my candidate Gore won in 2000 since he got the most votes in the popular vote in Electoral College. Of course, he didn't get to serve. That hurt. That one's still painful. And yes, of course, I supported John Kerry in 2004. I know what it's like when your candidate loses. It hurts. You work. You pour your heart out. I didn't just support these people. In high school, I put envelopes. I remember stuffing envelopes for Gary Hart, for Al Gore. Oh, you know who I won in 2004? I just remember now. I wanted Wes Clark against John Kerry. I still have his sign. Anyone remember him? Supreme Allied Commander in Europe. And then he lost to John Kerry, who I supported, who then lost to George Bush. Trust me, I've been on the losing side of many a Democratic race. But you get over it. First comes denial. Then comes anger. And I think we're already moving from anger to bargaining. You know the five stages of sadness of loss, of accepting a loss, of accepting some traumatic event. Denials first. Bernie Sanders, people were there. They're gone now. I don't think they're in denial anymore. Then came anger, and I think we just are leaving the anger phase. And now comes bargaining, and bargaining is perfectly fair. Indeed, there will be actual bargaining. And I want you to know that behind the scenes, I have encouraged everyone I know, and I know a lot of people who are Hillary delegates in Virginia. I know some national people. I've encouraged them to bargain fairly with the Sanders supporters. I think Sanders has a right not only to have a good prime speaking spot at the convention, but to put a lot of his ideas on the platform. We need to be fair to Bernie Sanders supporters. We need to be good winners, even if some Sanders people aren't good losers. And after bargaining will come sadness, folks. People will wonder about what might have been. And then will come acceptance. And I think the Sanders people will be surprised by how liberal Hillary Clinton really is. She's more liberal than Bill, folks, and she's more liberal than Obama. And they won't agree with everything she does. Who does? But I think she's going to be a great president of the United States. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. Only got about 3 minutes left, and I've got like five callers. I should have known this would happen. Let's go quickly to as many as I can reach. Daniel in Albuquerque on line two. Hey, Daniel, how are you?
Howdy. Good. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. We only got a few minutes left, so make your point, please, quickly. I'm going to move on to someone else.
I just wanted to say that Bernie should stay in the race until the convention to keep Hillary as left as he can.
Okay, I got your point. I'll respond to it after I take a few more calls. Let's go to Tom in California on line three. Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm fine, Mark. I was hoping to have a little conversation with you, but...
Sorry, we'll have to do that another day.
Okay.
Make your point quick, please. Go ahead and make your point, Tom. Oh, I didn't
I think
mean
maybe
to.
He took that as like don't even.
No, I didn't mean that. Oh, okay, all right, Mike in Memphis, line four. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Hey,
I just want to say, you know, I hope when they change the rules, they try to change the rules in the platform, but they don't let independents vote in our primaries because you see how unpredictable they are.
Yeah,
you know
no,
I
hear
they
you.
Don't change that.
I hear you. Plus, you have a all lot right. more crossover from Republicans, which also happened in our race. Thanks, Mike. Helen in Ithaca, line one, real quick.
Hi, Mark. You know I'm a Bernie supporter.
I do.
Remember, I don't know. Yeah, but if I wasn't, for practical reasons, I think this creep on the Republican side, he is going to be able Trump. He's going to be able to clean her clock in a debate because she held.
I don't think so, Helen. I don't think so. I'll tell you what. Let me respond to all of you in the minute I have left. I will say this. By the way, creep is too good a word for this guy. He's a monster and a racist. I think Hillary's done very well against the Donald. I think her speech last week, her foreign policy speech, was excellent. I thought her speech last night was excellent. I think she remains dignified in the face of a lot of insults. I think she's going to do a great job against the Donald. As to Daniel, I say that Bernie Sanders should bargain. He has earned his right to bargain. He should sit down with Hillary Clinton, and I think he will this week, and talk about platform. But I don't think he should stay all the way to the convention. He may in the convention get his votes cast. This is what Hillary did, by the way, 8 years ago. She endorsed Barack Obama the day after the California primary, and then she went ahead and had her people cast votes for her. Sanders' people should cast votes for him, but he should make clear that he's endorsing Hillary and get what he can in the bargain. This is Mark Levin. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments, I didn't have time for them. People like Tom, post them on my website at marklevintalk.com.